when you get to that discomfort, if you stop and you let the discomfort win, you are the only person who has got to deal with how you feel afterwards.
Yeah.
Ask yourself at that time, like, I can stop now. I can not take another step forward. Tomorrow, am I going to be happy with that decision? Is the future version of myself going to be happy with that decision?
Tom Evans served in the army for 8 years, achieving the remarkable feat of becoming the youngest captain in the British Army. But everything changed for him when in 2016, he accepted a pub bet to compete in the iconic Marathon du Sable, one of the toughest foot races on earth. When you reach a certain pain threshold, what do? You compartmentalize that pain? Do you take yourself somewhere else? Do you grin and bear it?
I know these races are going to be really tough. And I...
First of all, though, Tom, so you joined the military at 18. Was that always something that you'd always wanted to do as a boy growing up, or was there another plan?
No, I think joining the military for me was, yeah, I guess it was always part of the plan. My dad, he served in the military for not for long, for 3 years. And when I was at school, as a lot of people are sort of and get sort of their school reports at the end of the year, and mine sort of whatever say would always say, if Tom concentrated as much in the classroom as he puts effort into on the sports pitch, he could be dangerous. So yeah, for me, being outside, testing myself in unconventional ways rather than in the classroom was always, for me was always way more rewarding and exciting, and it's what I really got a kick out of. And it was like problems, even now it's like problem solving is one of my, it's one of my favorite things to do. And in a classroom where everything is so, this is either right or it's wrong, for me it's not, you could get 100% in an exam, and for me that's not rewarding at all. Whereas in a evolving situation, whether it was playing sport where there is no like 100% correct answer, it was a, okay, this is what's happening, what can I do now to try and manipulate what's going on to make it favorable for me or for a team. And the only thing that I could think of when I was a kid was joining the military. So I I did my A-levels and I then went to Sandhurst. And I guess, that was always, I was very fortunate and went to a, I was privately educated, went to boarding school, incredibly institutionalized. And going to Sandhurst was just an extension of school. Yeah. Having to wake up at the time that you were told, make your bed, fold everything up. Like, yes, it was a bit more extreme than being at school. But I loved it. I thrived. It was, for me, it was just, I say easy isn't the right way to describe it, but it was straightforward. It was, okay, this is what you need to do. Do it as well as you possibly can, whether it's folding your bed or ironing your shirt or the fitness challenges or the leadership roles. Do everything as well as you possibly can and just get better every time you do something. And for me, that was super rewarding. And so, I guess it had always been part of the plan. And, but I guess that's where the plan ended. There was no, it was, okay, well, now you're in the army. Then it's, okay, now what do you want to go and do? And I think every, I'd say 95% of British Army officers who join the infantry end up wanting to go onto special forces. And that was something that hugely, hugely interested me, but never happened, as other opportunities took its place. And so, I finished Sandhurst, served in the Welsh Guards for 8 years, sort of highlight there sort of being the OC recce platoon, which sort of the, in my opinion, sort of the most prestigious role for a junior officer. You're given a lot of, responsibility, and what you do determines what everyone else does, and how good you perform is the, the first step for everyone else. So it was a, I guess sort of helping people do as well as they can do dependent on how well I can do and my team does, I guess.
Hey, Alex here again, and I wanted to ask you, what defining event are you doing in 2024? Something that's going to help you get from where you are to where you want to be. For me, it's going to be an obstacle course race with Spartan or Tough Mudder. If you'd like to do the same and help you develop the physical and mental strength to take on all of life's challenges in 2024, then I can help. Because Screw It, Just Do It and Spartan, Tough Mudder are partnering up this February to offer you a big discount on their 2024 UK events. For Tough Mudder, podcast listeners can save 30% with the code TOUGHMUD30. Any 2024 Tough Mudder UK event for both distances. The discount expires on the 29th of February and starts on the 1st of February. Just head to toughmudder.co.uk/events and enter the code at checkout. For Spartan, podcast listeners can again save 30% with the code TOUGHMUD30. For any 2024 Spartan UK event, that's Sprint, Super and Beast, with a discount again starting on the 1st of February and ending on the 29th of February. Just head over to uk.spartan.com/en. Both offers cannot be used in conjunction with any other offer or discount and excludes any of the other endurance race series or the Little Mudder. So join a community of normal individuals with an abnormal commitment to overcoming challenges that will test your physical strength, mental grit, and aptitude for camaraderie. See you at an obstacle course race this year. And was the a bit, you know, what was the continuation of that plan that was kind of mapped out career-wise? Was it the ladder, you know, you reached captain, was it youngest captain in the British Army, and then what was next steps like planned out for you by the military?
Yeah, great question. The military loves planning, but no one knows what's going on.
Right.
It was especially in the infantry, you were so busy the whole time, you couldn't plan 2 months ahead, let alone.
Really? No way.
Not a chance. Because something would happen, the situation would change, and you would then go and do something else. So for me, I had always enjoyed far more being on the ground as part of a team. And I joined the British Army at a weird time, sort of as Afghanistan was starting to close down. So in all of my training was very Afghanistan focused. But I then got to the Welsh Guards at the end of their post-tour leave after getting back on their final tour to Afghanistan. So you're joining a platoon where you're joining a team where you are the only, everyone has a shared experience except the person who's supposed to be in charge. So that had it was a very interesting time, and I learned a lot and had to learn incredibly quickly. So that was hugely rewarding once you got people on side. And actually I did a lot of that through sport. Being in a Welsh regiment, sport is, and rugby especially, is a huge part in their livelihood. And I guess for me, when the career changed, was I had no desire in sort of driving a desk and sitting at a computer. And the sort of the moment that I was spending more time in front of the computer than instead of with the lads, not actually being able to help them sort of in a first order effect way was going to be my time to move on. And I hadn't reached that stage when I did decide to move on. I probably had another 2-3 years, I would have thought. But growing up, I've always been a bit of a yes man, and I am now learning. One of the lessons that I've learned in the last couple of years is like, it's okay to say no. Just because something might be good for you, actually, I'd rather focus on what I'm doing and do that exceptionally well rather than just trying to do everything all at the same time. And
it's so easy though, isn't it?
Being average.
It's so easy to say yes to all of these things coming in. And as you'll find, as you become super successful, more opportunities present yourself through the people that you're meeting. But I think having something that you can frame that and go, is that, I don't know if you read Steve Redgrave's autobiography, you know, will it make the boat go faster? Yeah. And if it won't make the boat go faster, then it might be a great thing, but that could be 10 years away, or it might never be the right thing for you.
And I think that's a really important lesson for everyone. Like whether you're an elite Olympic athlete or you're trying to be the best husband, mother, whatever it is. It's like, what is actually important to me at this moment? And whether it's, oh yeah, well, this could be great. This might look great in 10 years' time. It might not. Just don't worry about it. Focus on the now and like actually be present with what you've got. And I think there would be a lot of looking back when I left the army in end of summer 2019, 6 months before COVID happened.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So looking back on it, that was a really weird time to leave. However, had I not have left then, would I still be in now? It would have been significantly harder. Sort of a post-COVID sports marketing industry is it's taken a huge hit. And I was fortunate enough to get in before then. I guess there's no real knowing. You make the decision with what you've got at the time. And in my opinion, like, it's way better to make a decision with all the info you've got rather than sort of just sitting on the fence and being like, oh yeah, maybe, maybe not.
Agree with you.
Let's make the decision.
No decision is just like the worst.
Let's make the decision, whether it's the right one or the wrong one. You've made it. You're the one who's got the responsibility for it.
Mm.
Deal with the consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
Or reap the rewards.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that one. Ultimately, I read that running actually wasn't your first love, rugby. Is that right? That's my favourite sport, always has
Yeah,
been.
I think certainly at schoolboy level, at the time I thought that I was epic. As I think a lot of players do, like you're in the top teams.
So did I. I thought I was always going to play for Wales, but
yeah, and
35, I suddenly thought it's not going to happen anymore.
I looked far better than I actually was. I would score a try in the last minute. I would make a try-saving tackle.
Right.
On the 5 meter line with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
It wasn't because I was good. It was probably because I was in the wrong place, but I had a bigger engine than anyone else. Mm. I wasn't tired at the end of a game.
Okay.
I could have played, and I did better and better in sort of tournament style fixtures, whether it was playing rugby sevens, because by the time that everyone was knackered at the end, I was like, oh, well, I actually feel okay. So looking back at it, I was, yes, I loved the sport. I wasn't particularly good at it. I was pretty naive thinking that I was good at it.
Mm.
And actually, if I pulled back, the layers of complexity to it, I was good because, one, I tried really hard and I outworked everyone else. And two, I had an engine and I could use it. And so I would just run the whole time. So you'd look far, so you'd be seen by scouts and think, oh, this player's really good because they're here, they're there, they're everywhere. But actually, you've just got no idea what's going on. You're just running around like mad because you can.
But I think to one of your points there, and I think you could take that in what you do, what I do, what anybody does with their lives, is if you're prepared to outwork the opposition, the competition, then you got to fancy yourself to be, the last one standing, because you can control that. All the other things, you can't necessarily control that, the conditions in a race, for example, the opposition in a rugby team. But if you're prepared to outwork your competition.
Oh, 100%. And there's the saying, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's especially with something like running is the most basic things. If I genuinely break down my job now as an ultra runner, I am trying to get from A to B quicker than anyone else. It is that simple. And yes, you then dive into the complexities of pacing and running uphill, downhill, nutrition, hydration, mental strategies. And it becomes so much more. But at the end of the day, I am trying to get from the start line to the finish line as quickly as I can, ideally quicker than anyone else, and that's it. Like, it's so easy to get lost in everything else that's going on, but actually you break it down to like a real granular level. It's easy.
You can break everything within that down for that purpose. So you can break down your nutrition, your training, your race planning, all of those things.
And it can become really stressful, and sometimes it's very difficult to see it clearly, and it's really easy to lose sight of what is actually going on. When actually I'm a professional runner, it's a complete dream. If I wasn't a professional runner, I'd still be running.
Do you still have to pinch yourself when you say that I'm a professional runner, or you're used to saying it so many times now?
It is definitely something that I don't take for granted. And now, I guess, living in a high performance environment, and my wife is a professional triathlete, Sophie. And hoping to qualify for the Paris Olympics this year. We live in a high performance environment, both as athletes, but also as humans. And whether you want to, being the best athlete in the world, it's sometimes easy to leave other things and maybe not be the best friend that you've can be. So I think it becomes a balancing act with everything. And actually, if you're happy, you're far more likely to perform better. So I'd far rather be happier than well prepared. But if you can do both at the same time and find a way to make that work and be really good at that, then I think you're onto a winner.
And that is, for a lot of people, the idea of living the dream, being a professional athlete, competing for things like the Olympics, these, high echelon races that you've done as well. That is like kind of boy's own stuff for a lot of people listening, a lot of people watching this. Would you say your screw it, just do it moment was betting your friends in the pub that you could finish higher than they could at the, and I always, do I pronounce this correctly, Marathon du Sable?
A very good pronunciation, I'd say. I think there was probably two moments. The first was definitely signing up to Marathon du Sable. That, for those who don't know, is a 250-kilometer multi-stage self-supported race across part of the Sahara Desert.
Which is hot.
Yeah, I think it got to like 48 degrees when we were racing.
No.
But the faster you run it, the easier it is, because you're on your feet for less time. Mm. There's a certain distance that you need to do each day, and you go from camp to camp to camp.
Yeah.
The quicker you do it, the less time you're on your feet, the less time you're in sort of direct sunlight. So actually, way more kudos to the people who were right at the back at the cutoffs. That's the real, it's not the race, it's not the sharp end, it's not the exciting part of the race, but way more impressive.
Yeah.
Like I ran it in 18 and a half hours, 19 hours, the whole thing. And there were some people that one day for them was that time.
Really?
So it's just,
wow.
Yeah, so it sort of completely blows that apart. So yeah, I definitely think that was one of the moments. And then the one that sort of led me to be where I am today was that the decision to leave the military to focus on this.
Mm.
I think in order to, I needed to be able to plan things slightly further ahead than, and actually know what was going on, rather than, okay, well, I've planned this training camp in 6 months' time. I'm going to be away for 6 weeks, and then to get a call 2 days before you go, one of your soldiers has been arrested, you need to go to court with him next week. You can't say no. And you're like, I very nearly didn't go to Marathon du Sable because we had to do a military exercise on Salisbury Plain that was, the dates got changed by a week. So I was going to miss the first, I was going to miss the last 2 days of the exercise because that was the first 2 days of Marathon du Sable.
Mm.
And it very nearly didn't happen. Had that not have happened, I wouldn't be here.
I was going to say, really?
That was the first that was the first real moment of clarity and things, yeah, things went well. And that was probably the first.
So you finished third, is that right?
I finished third. Phew. So yeah, things went well.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I loved it.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
That was for me, that was the, actually you found something that you really, really enjoy. And what people say, like, find your hobby and then find a way to get paid to do it.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, I'm going to do this regardless of whether I'm paid to do it, because I absolutely love it. Just happens to be I'm pretty good at it.
Mm.
And yeah, fast forward a few years and here we are talking in an incredibly fortunate position where, yeah, I'm with some of the best brands in the world, I think, and I'm able to plan what I'm doing and I'm able to have real influence in not just at a personal level, but creating new shoes. And yeah, you're fortunate enough to have this voice that you can have some, yeah, some impact in the world, which is, yeah, which is incredible.
And you feel that, it sounds like to me that you feel like you are ultimately master of your own destiny. You're not, yes, you've got, it sounds like you've got fantastic support. So it's like Red Bull, Adidas, Terex,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, Red Bull, Adidas, Garmin, Morton. And yeah, they, I sort of always describe it as like with a brand or a partnership is how I'd call it, is like, don't kiss on your first date. Like it's very much a long-term partnership.
Yeah.
It's a relationship that you foster, and things have changed with all of the brands who are part of this journey. But at the end of the day, like, our goals are aligned.
Yeah.
And yes, there might be different ways in which we both want to get there, but ultimately we want to get to the same place. So you've got that. I have got that ability to say, like last year, for example, right, I want to raise Western States and I want to win Western States. Everyone's got ideas and how they think is the best way to do it. And I'm happy to listen to anyone and say, okay, well, maybe I might do this. I don't think that's going to work, but I'm the one, right, this is the goal. This is what you want me to achieve. You want me to win this race. Great.
Mm.
Leave it to me. And I will come up with a strategy to increase the chance of that being able to happen. At the end of the day, it's sport. Nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah.
But you do what you can with what you've got. And when things work out, which happens far less regularly than maybe you would like, but that's sport and that's what keeps you coming back day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, because you're just forever wanting to improve, get better. I say every day, pretty difficult to get better every day, but you're taking a step to get better. You're setting the conditions in order to get better every day. And yeah, that journey for me is just, yeah, it's super rewarding and enjoyable.
And what does that, for those listening, what does that like high performance environment look like? And you, Sophie, your wife, same environment with what she's looking to achieve as well. What does that look like on a daily, weekly, monthly basis? Like, you know, what goes into that thinking for like picking a race and going, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put a plan together that's going to maximize my chances. But what other input kind of goes into that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And for both of us, Sophie is, it's interesting. She's part of the British Triathlon. She's a lottery funded athlete.
Okay, yeah. So, she's a triathlete, yeah.
Because it's an Olympic sport and she's very good, she's ranked fifth in the world, she gets funding from the lottery to win Olympic medals.
Yeah.
That's what you're paid to do. So her structure is very, it's very, very structured. And as a triathlete, a lot of them sort of tend to train in a squad environment. Mm. So it's training is it, we're in the pool at 7 a.m. on whatever days it is.
Yeah.
And then we're going to ride at this time. We're all going to meet here and do this. And when we run, we're going to do this, this, and this.
Mm.
For me, it's a little bit different. Like, I've got a, I guess in a way I've tried to replicate it, and you can definitely see sort of my military approach to it. I am not the best person to answer all of the questions about psychology, coaching / my training program, my physiology, my nutrition, and my run technique, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's a, okay, well, who is the best person who can help me on that journey of discovery to get better at all of these things? Because if I can get, if I've got five pillars of performance, mm-hmm. if I can increase everything by 1% in a 6-month period, well, that's now just shot me up 5%.
Exactly.
Rather than me sort of just trying to figure everything out in my head. Mm. So it's that ability to not be afraid of reaching out to someone saying like, hey, what do you think about this? And I guess we've got a very close-knit group. So my coach, Scott Johnson, who's based in the US, and my physiologist, who has just left INEOS and is now at a London-based football club. And has just been, has been incredible to have that sort of inner sanctum, that inner circle of, okay, well, this is, we can have really great conversations together, and then we can branch it out a little bit and be like, okay, well, this is where we need to improve because these are the demands of the event that we're going to be doing. Mm. So identified, okay, take UTMB, for example. You spend, out of a 20-hour race, you're spending 12 and a half, 13 hours climbing. Okay, so if I can improve my climbing by 1, 2% as a percentage of the whole race, that's going to, I'm going to get the most bang for my buck by doing that.
Got it.
Okay, well, how can we improve this? Like, what do we need to do? Like, what science is there? Great with the science. Okay, well, now in reality, like, what does that actually look like? And then it's like, well, what can I actually do? Because, yes, that's what we want to achieve, but everyone's road is going to be slightly different for it. And that's in all walks of life, whether you're training to try and win UTMB or get a promotion at work, whatever it is, like, there are lots of different ways. There isn't one standard, one size fits all. And I think for me, like, as I think with a lot of athletes and a lot of high performing people in business and anything, like, I am not afraid to fail. And I think that's the real, do I like not succeeding? No, I hate it. I really don't like underperforming because I try so hard, I put so much into it. But just because I don't like something, I know the outcome is going to be good for me. Like, that being, kids don't like greens. Kids don't like vegetables. Massive oversimplification. They don't like them, but you know it's good for them. So you're going to try and find a way to, oh, here's some peas. Let's hide them in a pie or whatever it is, because you want to eat your five a day. I know that failure is good for me. Whether that's through learnings that I make afterwards or being in a really hard position and having to look really deep inside myself and ask, actually, do I still want this? Mm. And I've been in situations like that recently, and in out of a race and in races where you just think, like, do I want this enough? And the only way to find out is to really ask yourself. And if you don't want it enough, you're never going to be able to perform at the best of your ability. And it takes being in that place of hurt and opening yourself up to that failure gives you the opportunity to one, question yourself, and then two, give the honest answer to yourself. Because the only person who knows what's going on is you.
And you're also in a sport, like an endurance-based sport, where you've got time for those questions to enter in your head during the actual event, rather than, say, a football or a rugby, where you don't have time to actually question what you're doing in that moment. So it's quite an interesting place to be, isn't it, in your own head, basically.
Very, and racing is so easy because there's people watching you, you're with other people, whether you've got people on the course cheering you or you know that they're watching the live feed from back home. And it only lasts for, let's say, 20 hours, just a very long time. Mm. But I race 2-3 times a year. I train 25-30 hours a week, every week, without people watching.
Yeah.
That's the really hard stuff.
Mm.
Where there's no one cheering, there's no one saying, oh, come on, like, keep going, this is really good. You might be on your own, it might be icy, it might be snowing, you might be on the treadmill, or you're on the treadmill and you have a power cut. And you're like, well, this is, I'm in the middle of my session, like, what do I do? I could just think, oh, well, I'll just go read my book, I'll just go chill out for a bit, fix it. Or you think, actually, this was the plan. I've said that this is what I am going to do. I am now going to go and do it.
Mm.
Whereas I think in racing, that's the enjoyable part. I love training. I really like, if I couldn't race, I loved COVID in some ways because I could just train.
Yeah.
I could just focus on this is what I'm doing today. And
distractions are just
and races, yeah. Like, I was still, my goal in this sport isn't necessarily to win this and this race. It's to get better. Mm-hmm. It is to improve. So when you had, okay, cool, here's 12 months, how good can you get? And I cocked up massively and overdid things, got injured, and spent a year rehabbing and had surgery, and I did it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I have now learned from that and approach things in a slightly different manner, that a mistake isn't necessarily a mistake, it's an opportunity to learn.
Tell us a little bit more about that. That's interesting. As you were saying earlier about not being afraid to fail, and then the example you just gave, for example, was that you trying to do everything yourself, not taking asking experts in their field to help you make that decision, or what would you say?
I think I was still definitely asking the experts in their field, but I just had the time. And it's going to sound really sad, but I just love running. I love running. I love training. I had so much time where I wasn't meeting with brands. I wasn't planning on launching my own brand or helping to design a shoe, because everything was shut down.
Mm.
It was a, what am I going to do today? Oh, I'm just going to train. I'm going to speak to my friends, and that's it. So you go very quickly, you go from a super structured world to a, okay, well, everyone's kind of now just doing their own thing. Like, let's just do what you enjoy doing. Like, and the Navy SEAL saying, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. Moderation's for cowards. Which,
yeah.
Like, and I have a super, super addictive personality, as I think a lot of professional athletes do, and a lot of high performing individuals do.
Yeah.
I am very thankful that my habit is exercise.
Mm.
Because it very easily could be something else.
Mm.
Like, I love exercising. I love how it makes me feel. It's horrendous at some points. And there's some days that you really don't want to do it. And I think a lot of people will look at professional athletes and think, like, oh, everything's just, like, it's super easy. And, like, yes, they do some really hard training sessions. But you don't always love what you do. Like, I'll do some 6-hour training runs in the Lake District that just fly by. And I look at my watch, I'm like, how have I already done 4 hours? I'll do other runs where I look at my watch and I've done 6 minutes. And I think, how have I only done 6 minutes? I want to stop. But it's knowing that, okay, well, why am I doing this? Like, what is the purpose for doing this? Is it going to improve me today? No, probably not, because endurance takes a long time, and just the very nature of the definition of endurance, to endure, to do something difficult for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, it does what it says on the tin.
So you're not going to get overnight success. And I think that's the thing that I love about this sport, is there is no overnight success. You can't have it. You have to work. You have to grind. I'm not going to be at my best for another 4 or 5 years. So I have to give myself the opportunity to get to those 4 or 5 years so I can perform at my very best.
And is that like historically people will take that long and that kind of from when you started to get there?
Yeah, I think I think you're training, you get so economical and efficient and that takes time. And for me, someone who started this sport at a later age, I don't have a huge historical training background with the specificity of ultra running. Yes, I've got a sporty background, but it was all team sports, rugby, football, hockey, bit of track and field, bit of cross-country running, but it was never it was never specific. Whereas you look at the people that you're competing against, and certainly in Europe, they grew up on skis in the mountains.
Right.
And they skied in the winter and they hiked and ran in the summer forever.
Yeah.
So I'm now at the position where I'm like, right, well, how do I... These are the guys that I'm competing against. Like, if you train like everyone, expect the same results as everyone.
Yep.
So what can we do differently? Whether that's... Yeah, whether that's optimizing my nutrition strategy, whether it's making sure that I'm in the right headspace, whether it's doing different looking sessions on the treadmill, whether it's instead of doing ski mountaineering in the winter, actually I focus on 10 kilometer cross country and I get as fast as I possibly can. It's like, well, let's do things a little bit differently and let's not be afraid to do things differently, because if it doesn't work, okay, well, at least we know.
Yeah,
at least we know for next time that it's not going to work. Or it might work, but what's the point in worrying about, oh, this might work in 6 months' time. It might not. Okay, well, don't worry about it. Why would you worry about something that may or may not happen? And it's something that, yeah, I've been working really hard with my psychologist lately, is like worry and trying to map everything out and plan everything out. Okay, well, I'm going to do this and that's going to lead into this and that's going to lead into this. As soon as one thing out of that collapses, you're like, oh, well, I can't get there. It's like, well, why? Like, why worry about these? Worry about today and sort of stay curious about and find that, yeah, find that excitement in the now and today's training and then tomorrow's training, rather than worrying, thinking, oh, in 8 months' time, I know I'm going to be so worried on the start line in Chamonix before racing UTMB. 100 miles is such a long way. Oh, what if the weather's doing this? What if my stomach's bad? What if it's not? Just ignore it. Let all...
Love that.
And yeah, and I think that's...
Yeah, love that.
I think that's been a... Yeah, rather than worrying, oh, like, I might not be able to do this. Well, find out when it happens. Rather than... And yeah, and that doesn't mean don't plan things. But what's the worry going to do? Is it going to change your mind? Are you going to do things differently? If you are going to do something differently, like, actually, you probably should think about it a bit more. But being worried about something isn't going to improve your chances of it going better or you getting better.
And that the vision, super clear, you know, trying to get from point A to point B faster than anyone else. When you left the military, what were some of those action steps that you actually had to take to become a professional athlete, like just on a practical level? Do you have to go out and find yourself you know, a manager, an agent, sponsors? How does that even on a practical level?
At the beginning, it was very, it was of a shotgun approach and just message absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
And I reckon I was sending at least 20 emails a day, pretty much a copy and paste job, but changing a few things to make it specific. And the amount of times that you would get a reply back from someone said, oh, I think you sent this to the wrong brand.
We've all done that.
You put Adidas instead of Nike or whatever.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, like, oh, this is so awkward. But at least you've replied.
Yeah, exactly.
And out of those 20 emails a day, you might get one or two replies. And that's the world we live in. Lots of people want a lot of stuff. And why... At that, certainly that early stage of my career, I was certainly no more deserving than anyone else. Like, there were so many people doing what I had done or achieved similar things to what I had achieved.
Yeah.
And then it was just getting to know the brands. And actually, I signed with Red Bull in 2018, the night before my biggest race.
Really?
Before I had won anything.
Wow.
And are they, just thinking of it from a business point of view, they're buying you, they're buying into you ultimately, aren't they?
That's
the
it.
Person.
They're yeah. buying into me as a person and my vision.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because there's no, they're not, yes, they're obviously, at the end of the day, Red Bull is it's an energy drink company. They're there for whether you're driving across the country and need to pick me up, or you've left your dissertation to the last minute, or you're an endurance athlete wanting to get the best out of it. It's a product that I used before.
Yep.
I signed with them, and you know that you're working with the right people and you're going into the right partnership when someone is taking a leap of faith before the day before your big races.
How did you do in that first
Wonder
race?
Race.
Brilliant. ROI straight away then.
Had the contract been offered the day later, yes, I would have still signed it because Red Bull is a dream brand.
Yeah.
But the amount of people who tried to jump on the coattails after that.
Oh, right. Really?
Huge. So the company, the brand, the partnership that you form before you're successful, whatever that means.
Yeah.
You know the legit ones, the ones that are going to last. And there's no coincidence that they're my longest sponsor.
I was going to say, it's coming at 6 years, is it then, I guess? Wow, okay.
When it's just, and it's, yeah, it's a different, it's different to everything else because you are not, like if, and I saw an interesting thing, like you look on the Red Bull Instagram or social media channels, there is not one post that's about the product.
No.
Whereas every other brand, it's a, oh, you need to buy this, you need to Apple never tells you. They never tell you, you need to buy this product. It's like, this is what the product will help with.
Mm.
This is what our athletes are doing. And it's become more of a, I guess it's seen as a bit more of a marketing agency, and it's the best marketing agency. And I can go to them with a project and say, right, this is what I want to achieve this year. And you'll go to some brands and they'll say, oh, okay. Well, like, what's that going to cost? And how... like, what are your plans to do? Is you go to Red Bull and they're like, that's epic. Instead of being like, oh, like, this is going to be expensive. Like, how are you going to do it? It's a, their first question is, what can we do to help?
Fantastic.
That's who you want to work with.
That's exactly who you
want
to work with.
And that is in every walk of life.
Mm.
Find the people who believe in your vision and want to be a part of that journey to get you one step closer to that vision. And if you succeed together, amazing. And if you fail together, at least you tried.
Yeah, I was chatting to the Athertons, like mountain biking world champions, you know, Red Bull Rampage and that. And again, as you say, just kind of resonated with me again, not actually trying to say you anything. We're putting on this great race and we just want to attract the best people in the world to come and just showcase their skills. And by the way, it's run by Red Bull. Find out anything else you want to find out about.
and I think that's the amazing thing. And what they have built is a testament to the hard work that's gone on, but they're achieving one thing by achieving so many other different things.
Mm.
And they've given these athletes in these more niche sports the opportunities to do it and the voice to be able to do it. And I think, any person who's in your team who want to support you and want to help find a way to support you, no matter the circumstances, they're the people that you want in your corner when stuff gets tough.
Definitely. Interested to find out, Tom, so you get the most enjoyment from the longer races, yeah? Interesting, because when I only started running 2018 and just started with, you know, park run 5K that my wife got me into, always hated running my entire life going back to cross country in school. And then my listeners will be sick of hearing this, but basically in 5 weeks, I got, you know, challenged with this 5K for the NHS, you know, nominate five people, donate £5. So I did the park run 5K. next weekend, I thought, I enjoyed that challenge. Let's double it. So I did 10K. The weekend after, I did 10 miles. The weekend after that, I did half marathon. And then the Sunday after that, I was just like, screw it, let's run a marathon, which I did. And it was funny, now, like, fast forward on, like, 4 or 5 years, I don't feel that I get going until I reach, like, 6 or 7 miles. It's like a struggle to get to 6 or 7 miles. I don't know if you can identify with that. It's really weird. And now when I try and run, park, run, I'm like I'm running in reverse. Whereas I was like, I got it down to, like, 20:44 and I was trying to break 20 minutes. And then the marathon training is just taking me to another.
So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing that, and I guess you can look at the why. Like, I think when, for me, times don't matter. Like, I don't like racing, particularly on the road or on the track, where it's just all time-based. And you run London Marathon, and if you're vocal, oh, I want to break 3 hours. You run 3:01.
You got it.
It's seen as a failure.
It's ridiculous.
But what is the difference between, like, physiologically, there's no, if you can run 3:01, you can run 2:59.
Yeah.
It's just the day and how it played out.
Yeah.
So for me, it's why I love, with the shorter stuff, is why I love cross country. Mm. Because it's a, how hard can I work? That's it. That's all.
Right.
That's all that's around it. And how much can I hurt the other people around me? Because if I'm hurting, I know everyone else is going to.
Yeah.
And I love, I love suffering. I hate it at the time. And anyone who says that they enjoy suffering at the time, whether they do or not, I can't be the judge, but I definitely don't. It's as miserable for me as it is for anyone else.
Yeah.
I have the ability and the mental clarity to be able to think and to embrace that it's really tough and I'm hating it, but know at the same time, if I'm finding it tough, everyone else is.
Yeah.
Who's going to break first?
Yeah.
And for me, yes, and on the track and then on the road, things happen in a similar way, but it's all based around a time. Whereas for me, like, these ultra races, like, it's so much less about the time, but it's more about, I see it as almost more of an adventure, an expedition, rather than race in itself.
Mm.
The 90% of the people who do these ultra long distances, their goal is to complete it.
Yeah.
They don't want to compete. Yeah. If they do want to compete, they're competing against themselves.
Mm.
Like, you've got a really sharp end of the sharpy end.
Yeah.
But then the rest, everyone else is there just to see, like, right, can I achieve this? And no one at the end of UTMB or Western States asks, like, oh, what time did you run? No one cares.
Just did you do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're in the tribe. Like, you're part of this group of people who have achieved the most incredible thing. And there are such few sports where you can have the best in the world and Joe Bloggs on exactly the same start line, in exactly the same race, on exactly the same day. Like, if you were a huge rugby fan, you can't play against the All Blacks.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
can't do that. Like, money.
No, you can't pay to do
you
that.
You can't pay to do it. Whereas in this sport, like, you become part of the same family, part of the same tribe. You're in this community where everyone is trying to do the same thing and everyone is trying to improve on themselves. It doesn't matter what everyone else is doing. It doesn't matter if it starts snowing or it's raining or it's really hot. That's kind of irrelevant. It's a. We are all going through this together, and you then forge that bond. So you will meet someone and say, oh, I did Marathon des Sables in 2017. Oh, so did I. Like, oh, yeah, it was that third day, it was so hot.
Yeah,
it was. And, like, that's that shared experience and that sort of those shared memories that I think are really strong and really powerful. That I think in a sport like trail running or expeditions, you take it out of a sporting context, like expeditions. High performance endurance. Like, look at Ernest Shackleton. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't a race, but it's probably the biggest feat of endurance, one of the biggest feats of endurance ever.
Yeah.
And it was that ability to keep going and going and going and maintain a positive mental attitude, guaranteed it wasn't always a positive mental attitude, but he managed to switch it up when he needed to switch it up. And by the end of it, like, it was obviously incredibly tough. And
yeah,
but you're able to push yourself when you take the pressure off and when there are no expectations. So I imagine when you were running it to, like, you now know you can run 5K. You now know you can run 10K. That's not even the question, but it was that curiosity of being like, okay, well, I've now run 5K. Now I'm going to run 10K. I'm curious about it. I want to test myself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So every time I go back to a race, it's like, what can I do here? So it's, yeah, you might race the same race 20 times, but every time you run it, it's going to be different.
And when you say ultra, for those listening who don't know, give us an idea of some of the distances that, because they're going to vary, obviously.
Yeah, massively varied. But typically for me, sort of around the 100-mile distance. So 100, somewhere between 160 and 170 kilometres, so 100 miles, with anything from 5,000 metres of vertical ascent to 10,000. So Everest and a half from sea level.
Yeah, so it's funny, isn't it? So, like, before I ran a marathon, a marathon sounded bonkers, and now I've done a marathon, what you do sounds absolutely crazy, absolutely bonkers.
It's the next step of evolution for someone. If you've run a marathon, like, there are so many people now who will run a marathon, and whether they enjoyed or not, it's kind of irrelevant, but you get to the end of it, and there are three answers to the question that you're being asked. Because once you've done it, it's a, okay, well, what's next? It's either, I hated it, I'm never doing it again, which doesn't happen very often. Or it's a, I hated it, but I want to do it. And then a week later, oh, actually, this one looks great. It's in a different location. And actually, I ran 3:20. I think I can run under 3:15. Or it's a, I loved it, and I loved the challenge, but now what's my next challenge? Because my work, you work in an office as a, in a mediocre position, you can't really change how anything's done. You're sort of just working for your boss, who's working for their boss, and so on and so forth. Whereas with this, you can really go and test yourself, and you can really go and push your limits, and you can express yourself as you want to, with no one saying, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Yes, if you're an amateur, are you going to go run 2 hours for the marathon? No. Like, you are not going to do that. But I can't tell you here, oh, you can't do UTMB. You can't run 100 miles. Well, why not? And I think for me, that's the real thing with this sport, that, like, it is, I think it's only 20% physical. Like, it's, there's so much upstairs with what's going on. Like, 100 miles is a long, I don't like driving 100 miles. Running it is a seriously long way, and the dedication that it takes day in, day out for the training, and then on race day, 100 miles is a seriously long way through the night, maybe through two nights. Like, but you're testing yourself, and you are seeing, you are, I am trying to find, like, what is my limit? What is the edge of my performance? And then the better you get, it's the, okay, well, what is the edge of human performance? Like, as a human, like, what are we capable of doing? There is a limit. And I think Eliud Kipchoge is the most incredible athlete, but I think no human is limited. There are limitations. Like, you can't, I got injured because I did too much.
Yeah.
There was a limit.
Yeah.
I ignored that limit.
And you exceeded it.
And I exceeded it. But I have learned from that mistake.
It's funny you said those three options at the end of running a marathon, and I was exactly the same. I was just like, I hated it 48 hours, and at the end of 48 hours, I'd signed up to do New York, which I did 14 months ago.
There you go. And so that's the thing, and you'd have then set goals for New York dependent on how things went in the previous one.
Yeah.
Because it's your learn, it's what you have, you've taken what you've learned, you've recalibrated, and you've shot again.
What I learned was that the training is harder
because I didn't train for when I did a marathon on my own during lockdown. Training for New York was that much harder than I thought it was going to be. And something I was going to ask you, I was just interviewed Staz, one of Jay Morton's mates, who's the co-founder of Through Dark clothing company. And I was saying to him, you know, doing the marathon, I had the, you know, devil on one shoulder, the angel on the other, the one telling you to quit, the other one telling you to keep going. And he was like, when I was on selection for the Special Forces, and then, you know, getting interrogated and all of that, he goes, I literally just took myself away to another place and I created my dream home. And I was just like that. And he like talked me through it like for like about 15 minutes in every room that he was doing. Yeah. And I was literally wanted to ask you, what do you do when you... you know, when you reach a certain pain threshold, you know there's going to be another threshold and another one during the distances that you're doing. But what do you do? Do you compartmentalize that pain? Do you take yourself somewhere else? Do you grin and bear it?
I know these races are going to be really tough. And I know that I'm going to find out more about myself in the tough moments of a race, however long that's going to last. Let's say, worst case scenario, it lasts for 12 hours. It's only 12 hours. It's half a day. I have 365 of those a year. I'm 31 years old now. 12 hours is nothing. And in reality, like, the only thing that isn't being controlled and can't be manipulated is time. Unless there's time travel, which then we go into a completely different... Yeah. That is the thing that I can't control. So why, like, I know the finish line is the finish line. It's not moving. It's, that is a set distance, not changing.
Mm.
Time is changing, but the finish line isn't. And I know that if I keep moving forwards, time is going. I'm also moving close to the finish line.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever that's with, whether that's a passion project out of, either it's just through training or it's, yeah, trying to launch a product or it's in a race, like, that deadline's that deadline. That's set in stone. That's not moving.
Mm.
I need to figure out what I'm doing before then that's going to affect how everything works. And like, if you know that these things are going to be tough, when the moment gets tough, you embrace it. It's sort of like, oh, hello, old friend. You're back again. Now, like, I knew it was going to happen. You know it's going to be hard because that old saying, like, if it's going to be easy, everyone would do it. Not everyone does do these things because it is really, really tough. But I know it's going to be tough. So when it gets tough, I'm not surprised and I'm not nervous and I don't worry about it because what an amazing opportunity to learn more about myself in this moment of difficulty.
Yeah.
I get to bond with myself. I get to see the sort of person that I am. Like, how stoic can I become?
Mm.
It's not easy.
No, but I think that's it, is the learning about yourself and about... you're pushing your comfort zones. And I think my biggest takeaway doing something like that, which again, you know, dwarfs in comparison to what you and your guys and girls do, but is knowing that when you feel that discomfort, if you push through it, only good things are going to lie on the other side of it.
And if, when you get to that discomfort, if you stop and you let the discomfort win, you are the only person who has got to deal with how you feel afterwards.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So ask yourself at that time, like, I can stop now. I can not take another step forward. Tomorrow, am I going to be happy with that decision? Mm. Is the future version of myself going to be happy with that decision? Sometimes you'll succumb to it and you will drop. And you'll say, oh, actually, if I'm being really harsh on myself, I just quit.
Yeah.
I just gave up. I lost the will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. You can't succeed in everything. And I am, and again, going back to one of the first things I said, I'm not afraid of failing. So if that happens, yes, that doesn't mean I'm going to drop out of every race. But if it means that I do because I tried doing something that has never been done before, or I knew it was going to be a massive ask, like, the only shot that you're guaranteed to miss is the one that you don't take. Put yourself, and it's very easy for people outside to say, like, oh, well, he should have done this, he should have done that. Like, it's the man in the arena that's, they're the only person who knows what's going on. It's very easy to be an outsider and to look in and think, oh, well, maybe they could have done this, maybe they could have done that. You don't know what's going on.
Last couple of questions for you. Talking about a different type of discomfort, tell us a little bit about training on Table Mountain. Next thing you know, being rugby tackled to the ground. Next thing you know, you got a machete at your throat.
Yeah, something that you don't expect to happen when you're out on the trails in supposedly a safe part of the mountain. It was in the week before a race, Odds Trail Cape Town, at the end of 2023, so only a couple of months ago now. And yeah, out for a training run. I was on my own because that was what worked best to me on the day. That was my training session. And after speaking with local runners, like, this part of the trail's as safe as it, as safe as it can be. Out on the trail, single tracks are probably just under a meter wide, and two guys walking towards me, and I'm running towards them, and I take half a step off the trail to let them go past, and say, like, morning, and yeah, just get completely flattened and spend a while. It seemed like a very long time, so it probably was a long time. I think it's very easy to lose track of things, and fought back as best as I could. And yeah, the situation then changed when a sort of backpack got put down and two knives came out, one machete, one a sort of 6-inch kitchen knife, and you've got a knife on your throat and you can feel it cutting into your skin.
And what are you doing before that? You're like trying to get some shots in, or
yeah, you're
fending people off?
Kicking and punching, right. Wrestling as much as I can. I was then sort of in a headlock and I could hardly breathe. And
Jesus.
When the situation changes, to be able to have that mental clarity and be like, breathe. Like, things could very easily spiral out of control now. You're now not fighting. You're now trying to survive. And yeah, finding out after this event had happened in the last few months of 2023, there were 7 muggings and attacks on tourists, foreigners in South Africa. 5 of them were killed during that time. So 2 survived, myself and one other. That's it. When you look at stats like that, I hate to use the words lucky because I don't think it's luck. I think it was being able to deal with the situation and being able to play the cards that I had at the time that I had. And in a way, yes, I'm not thankful it happened to me. I'm just very thankful it didn't happen to someone else. Because actually, I am now okay with the situation. It happened. It was one of those, will I go back to South Africa to race again? No, I've no interest. Which right. is a real shame.
Yeah.
Because I really like it out there.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's beautiful, yeah. But there are a lot of things that I disagree with that happen out there, and there are lots of other nice places to go and race. So
it's a big world, eh?
It's a big world. There's lots to do. And so, yeah, and I think after that situation, it's, yeah, definitely changed, yeah, the way that I see some things. Like, life is short at the best of times, and you've only got so long to live, and you want to make it count. And whether it's going away on a training camp before a race, I've got a wonderful family at home, whether that's my parents, my wife Sophie, our two dogs, our eight chickens. I love home. I love being at home. And when I'm away from home, I really miss it. So it's, okay, well, let's make all of these trips count. And let's get all my ducks in a row, go on a training camp or go away in order to try and achieve the goal that I've set myself. Because the time when I'm away from home is time that I'm never going to get back. And I think it's significantly easier now without having a proper family. And if and when the time comes that we have kids or whatever happens, it'll be an even harder decision to make.
100%.
You want to make every shot. Can you win every race that you do? No. But you can try. And yeah, make each opportunity that you've got as good as you possibly can.
Yeah, and you know, reason I left like Virgin Atlantic after 17 years, it was after my wife was pregnant with our second child, and I remember walking out of our driveway, turning down our lane, and we're down a little lane with just six houses, and then it's like a cycle path into the woods. I remember looking back at the house, I don't know what called me to look back up at the house, but there was daughter number one's face in the window, and I was just going off to Sydney via Hong Kong for like 9 days, and I just thought, I don't want to be doing this anymore. And literally I made the decision, and within, I don't know, however many months, I'd finished the length of cert, you know, give them enough notice, and left. But that was it. I was like, I love travel. Travel's amazing. But again, if you're on your own, you're not enjoying it anymore, you want to be home, your mind's elsewhere, then it's like you said, you just go there, do what you want to do, make it the best effort that you can do, and then come back again.
Yeah. And then know that when you get back, it's incredible.
Exactly. 100%.
And I think that's the big lesson that I've taken from Cape Town this year is, make every shot count. Whether you hit a home run or not, I'm going to try and hit a home run every time.
And last question for you, Tom. Thus far in your career, what do you think is the one quality that you have? The one thing, doesn't even have to be a quality, one thing that has got you from where you were, like in the military, to where you are now as a professional athlete. It can be a quality, it could be a quote, a book, someone's advice. What's the one thing you think that's helped you get to where you are?
I think one of the big things that has stayed with me since before the military, my history teacher at prep school, so in UG's year 7 and 8, a guy called Harry Hastings, who is now the headmaster of Ardingly College. He coached me rugby and track and field when I was 10 to 13. He had a big thing of a saying, and he had it on the wall of his classroom, prepare to fail. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And I think for me, it's just so true. If you don't put the work in, you're not going to get anywhere. If you let things go by without embracing them, you're not doing anything. And as someone who wants to perform at the highest level that they're capable of, where things are divided by not even a percent, quarter of a percent, less than that, a tenth of a percent, you've got to prepare the best that you possibly can. And whether just because you prepare really well doesn't mean you're guaranteed to have a good day, but it's increasing your chances. Like, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And whether it's luck or not, it's you're framing it so that you put the hard work in, and you may or may not get the reward at the end. If you don't get it, well, you've learned and you've molded yourself to become a to become better than you were before. And if you do get the result at the end, it's become all of that sacrifice, dedication, hard work, investment has become so worth it. And it's then something that we've not even spoken about at all is once you then achieve your goal, very few people are satisfied because you set this big goal.
Yeah.
My goal for last year was to win Western States. And then as soon as I'd won Western States, it was like, okay, well, now I want to win UTMB. Within.
So you're reframing it.
Within 24 hours.
Mm.
And another saying of don't let the wins go to your head or the losses go to your heart. And something that I've definitely got better at, but I'm still not the best at, is celebrating success.
Yeah.
Not blowing my own trumpet, but sitting down and reminiscing and looking back at the year and thinking, like, actually, you did pretty good this year. People, as bad as Brits, like, we don't like doing it. It's, oh, well done, you did this. Oh, yeah, thanks very much. How are you doing anyway?
I think it's so important, but so few people, I'd say few high performers do it. Like, again, you know, we're a 550 episodes, and whether I'm chatting to like the founders of Lush, you know, that they'd just reached $1 billion turnover in revenues, $1 billion business, 25 years. And I was like, what do you do to celebrate? Oh, I didn't really get around to having a celebration. I'm like, hey, but what did you set out to achieve 25 years ago? You know, if that's not worth celebrating, I don't know what is.
And I think that's the thing. Goalposts, benchmarks are always forever changing.
Yeah, true, true, true.
And
yeah.
Sometimes, like at the end of the year, like what I did this year is just sit down and just go back through. Like, I keep a bit of a journal. I don't do it every day, but just when I fancy doing it, I do it. And being able to go back and read to it and seeing what I overcame in that year to achieve what I achieved or didn't achieve what I didn't achieve. And yeah, by looking back, you can think, actually, yeah, I did all right.
And for those who want to follow your progress, who want to have a conversation with you maybe, want to work with you, best place to go to?
Send me an email through Instagram. Yeah, all my details are on there, or just follow me at Tom Evans Ultra. Yeah, reach out and let's have a chat.
Awesome. Tom Evans, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for watching this episode of Screw It, Just Do It. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments below this video, as this episode helped move you closer to where you want to be. All that I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode and that it's moved you closer to getting to where you want to be, that you share this episode so that it helps one other person do just the same. Just ask yourself what small action will move you forward to get you from where you are, then screw it and just do it. Until next time.